Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. We got lions, we got tigers, we got Hillary Clinton mouthing off in Asia. This is kind of funny stuff. Let's go over some news events here, and we'll talk about Asia first, since there's all these huge war games going on there. Some of the biggest ever, actually, post the Korean War. Since the Korean War. Asia Times Online, U.S. goes fishing for trouble by Peter Lee. United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton roiled China at a recent Association of Southeast Asian Nations. That's that organization, ASEAN, foreign ministers meeting in Hanoi, by stating that United States had a national interest in freedom of navigation, open access to Asia's maritime commons, and respect for international law in South China Sea. She also expressed support for a collaborative diplomatic process on the matter of disputes in the South China Sea, anathema to China, which is committed to a series of separate bilateral negotiations with various nations with claims on the Spratly, called Nansha by the Chinese, and Paracel, called Kisha by the Chinese islands. All these different island chains, basically, I'm going to interject here, the Spratly and the Paracel are very hotly contested by China, and of course Japan can get in the way on this stuff too, but and of course Hillary's mounting off over there. A certain amount of media energy was expended to frame Clinton's remarks as a response to a disturbing expansion of China's definition of its core interests beyond Tibet, Xinjiang, and Taiwan to include the South China Sea. There's a good deal of evidence to indicate that China is not trying to ratchet up tensions in the South China Sea, at least not vis-a-vis its southern neighbors. Rather, it appears that the United States is once again using a contentious issue to exacerbate a problem, isolate China diplomatically, and to make room for an expanded role for Washington as a protector of interests of China's smaller and more anxious neighbors, while diverting attention from certain provocative U.S. actions. And they're 100% right on that. There's going to be a war, and there's most likely going to be a war in Asia if it doesn't start there. Israel is going to be doing a series of bombings supposedly in Gaza. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't start there, or who knows? Who knows? I'm hopeful that there's not going to be war till this fall, right before the elections, or something along those lines. I hope we don't have war in August. For certain reasons, everyone's on vacation, but they're mouthing off at China, and of course now that they're doing business with Russia, and Russia's not running around threatening selling weapons to all these different groups, Russia's now cooperating. Why is Russia cooperating? Probably because we're going to war. Russia's been playing into World War III the whole time. The truth has come out. Of course, we won't know anything exactly what's going on until it all happens. But China is, of course, very, very upset at this provocation. And they have built up China into something it is not. It has a lot of weapons, it has a lot of money, and they certainly are building more weapons. But they're nowhere ready to start taking on Washington, with Washington working with Moscow, unless of course Moscow's helping Moscow and a bunch of other parties like Germany behind the scenes are setting up Washington, which could very well be. We'll know when the war happens or right after, but they're not there's not a whole lot China can do except get upset and start pouting. But that's how a lot of these non-European populations are. They can't handle someone standing up to them, especially if they've been kowtowed to for so long. And China, of course, has been appeased for very, very long time. I don't know that war in Asia was always the program for World War III, but I'm guessing it is. Let's see the next piece. This is Reuters. Analysis: South China Sea spat fresh threat to Sino-U.S. ties. China was furious after it was ambushed at Asia's top security forum for discussion of sensitive territorial claims in the South China Sea. They're causing problems. They're instigating stuff with this administration is instigating stuff with China. Could it get ugly there? Yeah, it will get ugly there. Watch. The Obama administration must clearly understand, are they prepared to fully open up an area of friction with China? If they're not, then they are certainly given the impression that they are. The state-owned populist Global Times tabloid quoted National Defense University Professor Han Zhudong saying, yes, divide and conquer. Clinton's speech marked the public demise of Washington's old hands-off approach to the South China Sea. Though it was foreshadowed in the speeches by the U.S. military officials and diplomats who have long feared U.S. strategic interests in the area were being eroded. One of the challenges, and this is me interjecting, is that China is an in-between state. They don't have quite the power to take on Washington if they don't have the help from Russia. They don't have the power to be isolated. They don't have a great deal of, they don't have any natural resources, hardly. The big natural resources are the Spratly Islands with all that natural gas and all that stuff there. They don't have a deep water navy. They have a lot of, they have some nuclear weapons. They have some things that could cause problems if I were on one of these navy boats out in Asia. I wouldn't want this happening, but they can't really cause any problems without a lot of help. They're at that in between stage where they're just building their military. They're just getting big. They're just at the point where they're going to need a lucky break. They're going to need to get new lands. But they're also at a point where a lot of people are irritated by them. The Indian that would be India is irritated by them. There's some other different parties that are irritated by them. They own all the debt. They own a lot of debt from America, of course. And so you never know who could be setting what up. I expect this to be ugly, though. Let's see here. China tells America to mind its own business. And of course, China is usually mouthing off to America, and America pays it some attention. But now that they've decided on World War III, and now that Russia's on board since they're going to war, Russia wasn't on board when Henry Kissinger went over there in 2007. He wasn't on board when he stopped the Green Revolution. But now that all that's ended, and now that they're forced to go to war, now that he's on board with some elements in Anglosphere, and that has to give China that has to be kind of unnerving on what exactly they got planned. Because there's limited things China can do. They can do a lot of ugly stuff in the area, but we'll soon see. We'll soon see when this big shindig goes down. U.S.-Korea exercise focuses on anti-submarine warfare, air defenses. VOA News, Voice of America. They had huge exercises over there in all over the Sea of Japan there with the U.S. ships and whatnot. And I don't know that I'd want to be on a ship for this next war. You guys have my blessings over there. This one should be wild and woolly. Let's see, this is from The Nation. Obama maneuvers to contain China. Is he using the Pentagon to assert a declining American power in Asia? Well, America's power is declining, depending on what you're willing to do. You know, that can change in an instant. China's rising, but China's rising on debt from America and on selling goods abroad. China is now in the throes of some serious financial straits or some serious internal challenges as this global recession worsens. So again, it should be interesting to see what all they're getting ready to do. Clinton comments, Korea drills royal, the Korean drills royal U.S.-China ties. And so China and the U.S., this is an AP, Associated Press report, basically the same thing. Someone's went out of their way to create problems with China, to create a split with China. Now, typically what the, what one of the New World Orders was America and China, was America and China getting together. And that appears to be problematic. Even if you're talking about the knockoff war event, America goes to war with China and America ends up losing, and then China comes. They don't have the military to actually. They have military to give someone problems, but they don't have a military to actually be any good as a partner in that type of New World Order. You would have to give them another couple decades at the least. But there are many little Jew rabbits that haven't got the word yet that their New World Order with China is a no-go. That'll be very clear after this war. That they've been had. And moving right along, let's move across Europe here. This is The Sun. Big information. The Nazis, apparently... A suspected Nazi death camp guard has been charged over the murders of 430,000 Jews. This was a very busy guard. Yeah, apparently they're not giving him a medal, they're actually charging him. I mean, I figure you kill 430,000 people as a soldier, that's pretty amazing. But no, they're actually going to charge him and put him on trial. Interesting. In America, of course, we keep on getting inundated with all the different propaganda. All the different interesting propaganda, and regarding World War II, they just had another special on the Sci-Fi Channel. Ghost Hunters International was hunting. I want to say it was on the Russian-Poland border. The famous Wolf Slayer from Mein Führer. Three members of the historical foundation Shark Hunters were hunting ghosts there. This is the second special they did with them. This one was a lot more detailed. They were looking for Hitler's ghost. The first one was in South America. This one was a lot more details. It was over in that Wolf Slayer, somewhere in Europe, on the Eastern Front. The famous Wolf Slayer. They were running around. They didn't find Hitler's ghost, I guess. But if any of you saw that special, it was pretty funny. I only saw parts of it. But they continue to spend these. They continue to put out this stuff on World War II, tremendous amount of stuff on World War II. And some of the craziest shows have come on the Science Channel. You know, the Science Channel, it keeps on releasing new and better information on Nazi weaponry. You know, it's the man that can't die. They're hunting his ghost in South America. They're hunting Hitler's ghost on the Eastern Front in Europe. And even David Letterman has gotten the act. David Letterman did the unthinkable, and I think it was last night or a couple nights ago that we're talking at the end of July here. It came down, I haven't got the video recording of it, but David Letterman mentioned that Hitler didn't die when we think he died, and all this other stuff. out of left field, David Letterman on late night TV mentioned that. Fascinating stuff going on. And they keep on running specials after specials, and it gets more and more interesting, more and more crazy by the day. And we'll see how it all concludes. I expect to see something interesting right after this war. And let's see, moving back to news pieces here in America, besides David Letterman announcing Hitler didn't die, did not commit suicide. I can't wait to see the video of this and what the context was. Let's see, we had a big lone wolfer attack here in America. Yeah, steely-eyed lone wolfer of another sort. From the Animal Liberation Front. Apparently they burned down something. Biggest terrorist attack in America in a while. The animal rights group, Animal Liberation Front, went wild. They got their green goddess out on them. Of course, now they're hunting them like dogs. The ATF, that's a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, and the FBI arrested this young man, Walter Bond, in Denver and charged him with conducting the April 30 arson that destroyed a Glendale, Colorado business, the Sheepskin Factory. Yeah, big attack, Animal Liberation Front. Of course, they got caught, and they'll be dismantling that terrorist apparatus that's trying to liberate little animals. We've got a black congressman here in America in trouble, which is no big deal, because every African in office for any length of time has generally got themselves in trouble, one way, shape, manner, or form. And Charlie Rangel, the congressman, all this scandal over him, and it looks like he's going to get off. But the interesting thing has happened, and this happened back in the mayor of Detroit, Kwame Kilpatrick. He got himself in a whole lot of trouble, and the president, Talibama at the time, did what only a mulatto could probably do in America, in this politically correct, stupid America, is he told him he better step down. And so Kwame Kilpatrick stepped down, and then he got, of course, ramshacked. He's in jail, which is pretty interesting. Most people didn't think he'd make it all the way to jail, but they've been cracking down. On one end, we got an African president. On the other end, they're starting a slow trend in place to crack down, and Obama is actually being at the front of it. But what's interesting about the Charlie Rangel case is, you know, he's had all these ethics violations, and God knows the guy's probably broke 1,000 laws. He's been in Congress long enough. Probably no more laws than the other congressman, for all I know. But anyways, he's a black congressman, and he's in trouble. And apparently the Taliban has told him he should step down. It was just kind of shocking. A lot of apparently blacks are cheesed off that he didn't come out in front for his fellow African in America. But I think that's interesting. We'll see if Obama basically throws him out or something, if he does what he did to Kwame Kilpatrick. Now, Kwame Kilpatrick was on a felony indictment, but I don't know what Charlie Rangel's charge is. But with Kwame Kilpatrick, they couldn't really do anything until he stepped down from mayor of Detroit. They had a lot of problems with that. So the Taliban, Obama told him he's got to resign from being mayor. And, of course, they listened to Taliban because he's the big mulatto in charge. So this kind of surprised me that he followed the same pattern with Charlie Rangel and told him he's got to step down. I don't know what's going to come of it. I expect nothing to come of it but Charlie Rangel to be sitting there in Congress. But all the other corrupt congressmen, especially the African ones that break all these crazy rules and they get away with it time and time again. But we'll see. I don't know. There is a slow, gradual convergence of one simple fact, and that is Africans in America have been sold out, and they were sold out long, long ago. Can't do anything with them. It's just a matter of how they go from point A to point B over it. But let's move right along. And this is the funniest piece that came out, Wall Street Journal opinion journal, and this was on July 20th. Why hasn't Israel bombed Iran yet? It's kind of funny. And of course, Brett Stevens. I'm guessing it's Brett Stevens. Let me double check. Let me get my name straight. Yeah, it's Brett Stevens. Brett Stevens had went online and predicted war by June or something. War by June or July at the latest. And of course, it didn't happen exactly when he predicted, because it's impossible to predict that. You can only predict a trend. The trend's toward war, and a big war, and that isn't going to change until it changes. You know, that's been the trend. And so he's going over why on earth Israel isn't launching it. Well, the fact of the matter is, Israel, the more they find out, the more Israel has to get ready. And they're testing all this Iron Dome system, and they're testing all this other stuff. And all the different U.S. assets have not been in place until July, my information is. So that's what happens when you go on a line and give an actual date. You're generally going to be wrong, and if you are right, I guess you could be a hero for a day, but that's pretty impossible to predict. But the Israelis aren't really interested. In the last minute, they've actually tried in every way, shape, manner, form to talk peace with the Palestinians, to do something with the Palestinians, which is kind of confusing. Most people would think that that they would have done that years ago, but they put all this stuff off, and now they got themselves on the front line of a war that they don't really want. They don't really want this war. And you'll see that once the war comes to fruition. You know, it's one thing to want war. The Jewish elites had no problem with war for hundreds of years, but they were never fighting them. It's a little bit different when you're on the front lines, but they've been testing all this stuff, like the Iron Dome and all this other the Iron Dome is some way they can it can help them defend against multiple missile attacks and stuff like that. I don't know what's going to happen until the actual shooting starts, and apparently they've done another bombing in Gaza, and one of these bombings will count. You know, one time Israel will do a bombing and it'll count, but they're not going to go until they get everything set up and double and triple test it, and Israel for some reason is extremely leery about this, and I have a feeling we're going to find out why. But trying to predict exactly when it can happen, it's impossible. Probably before 2012, and I'll talk more about that. U.S. Navy successfully uses lasers to shoot down drones. This is July 20th. This is another, they're calling it Ronald Reagan Star Wars. This is something that comes right out of Ronald Reagan Star Wars. And they're testing all these lasers all in certain different oceans, especially off the coast of California. And that's good in case China gets a little uppity. They'll just shoot down. China doesn't have that many nuclear weapons. They'll shoot them down with lasers. I'm optimistic. Of course, if China did hit Los Angeles with a nuclear weapon, I guess that would put them at war with Mexico. Yeah, it's kind of a bad joke, but there are more Mexicans in Los Angeles than America. But anyways, we're testing lasers off the coast of California, and I'm guessing these lasers are certain phalanx type from Raytheon. And they're testing all kinds of this stuff all over the world. Everywhere we have all kinds of stuff going on in front of this war, especially in the Middle East, and especially apparently in the Pacific. But we'll see. This type of war is something that's going to be so big, no one's going to understand. No, most of the world's asleep coming into it, but no one will be once it starts. Let's see here. Ex-CIA chief, this is Associated Press, strike on Iran seems more likely now. July 25th, go figure. Let's see here. He predicts Iran will build his program to the point that it's just below having an actual weapon. I don't know if they got a weapon or not. I don't know what's going on there other than there's going to be a war. Now, the big event was antiwar.com released an interesting article. It was an accurate quote of Medvedev comment sparks latest Iran panic. Convoluted allegation could be said of countless other nations. Iran is nearing the possession of the potential, which in principle could be used for creation of a nuclear weapon. That's Medvedev. Well, Putin the whole time, they've been playing to deny elements and angles for the ability to take over Iran. At the same time, which would make war null. I mean, if the Green Revolution worked in Iran, they wouldn't have to go to World War III, apparently. So they say. Which kind of makes sense. If the World War III's spotlight is going to be on Iran, and Iran's neutralized, Ahmadinejad is neutralized, they won't have to go to World War III. At the whole time, they undermined the Green Revolution. Now they turn around and they're obviously working night and day with this administration now that they're forced to go to war. So it's kind of a big game there. Obviously, they're pointing for war the whole entire time for all these years. And of course, it talks about, the Russians have turned the back on Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad's been preparing for World War III since birth, probably. And he knows the game. We won't know anything until the dust settles and exactly what happens right afterwards. But let's see what Ahmadinejad said. Ahmadinejad says expects U.S. to attack Middle East soon. This was in Reuters, July 27th. He expects U.S. to launch a military strike on at least two countries. I'm guessing he thinks Syria. They've decided to attack at least two countries in the region in the next 3 months. Well, this is coming in right in front of the elections, and I'll talk about this in a minute when I talk about over a Senate vote on a Russian deal in the U.S. Senate. Let's see, there's polls. This is live shots. What is this? This is on Fox News. Polls wide support for an attack on Iran. You know, bomb Iran. That's what happens when you let certain elements run your media, like in America. And even Joe Klein in Time magazine, an attack on Iran back on the table. I didn't know it was ever off the table, but apparently he says it's back on the table. And Joe Klein has been anti-war, so I'm guessing he's playing both sides. You know, when he thought it wasn't on, he came out and said, well, it's not on, good, wonderful, we don't need war in the Middle East. Now that it's on, he's saying we got to go to war because evil Iran is going to bomb away, hit Israel with nukes and all that other kind of stuff. And of course, there was an Iranian scientist, and the Iranian scientist, the name is Mr. Amiri. And he was supposedly a double agent, no one really knows. And there are two different versions of the story. This is from the BBC. And so this scientist apparently was a spy, but we don't even know the deal on the guy. And this was a mini scandal. And to this day, I don't know what's going on. But the thing is, who wins propaganda war over Iran scientists? There are two diametrically opposed versions of the story. Iran says Shahram Amiri was kidnapped. American sources said that he defected and was giving them high-grade information on the Iranian nuclear program. Well, it says that he's some type of double agent or something, that he was spreading false information. I don't know. There are so many different moves in front of this war. It's hard to see all this stuff clearly. But this Mr. Amiri guy was a slight diversion. Now over to Russia. As our relationship with Russia is blossoming, for whatever that means, in front of this war, certain elements in Anglosphere, especially America, have tried to get in the way. And there was a hearing on the Russia treaty, and the President of the United States, one of his top priorities was signing that treaty with Russia. It was a New START treaty with all kinds of other stuff in it, and they've been working with them nonstop now for a year, every week, and all these different meetings, all these different groups meeting. Well, this thing is coming into a vote. This particular Senate vote in regarding the New START treaty that the President and Mr. Medvedev has signed. And they're trying to get in the way of it. And some Democrats, but a lot of Republicans. And they're alleging compliance issues and everything else they allege when they want to get in the way of something. Senator Kerry is working with his colleagues in the administration to hear views and address questions raised by senators about the New START treaty and related issues as quickly as possible. These efforts and discussions are ongoing, and as of now, no final decision has been made about whether to proceed with the vote in the Foreign Relations Committee next week. This was on July 28, 2010. This is New York Times. I don't know what's going to happen with it. It's one to watch on what exactly they're going to do. Does it matter if they don't sign it? It would matter if the Republicans got elected this fall, because they could get in the way of everything. And they're going to get elected if there's an election, because everyone hates Taliban and hates all the Democrats. And the Democrats, of course, control the House and the Congress. So maybe he's just having fair play. Mr. Kerry and the group John Kerry belongs to, Pink Rabbit Bankster and Leadsters, he's certainly going to have sour grapes. He's not going to, they're going to want to get in front of it, and they'll try to use Republicans for that. And Republicans, of course, are chomping at the bit over this new relationship with Russia. Of course. Let's see here. Let's move on to the Washington Times. Russia violated 91 start till end. U.S. report finds. In other words, what they're saying is the previous, start treaty, Russia violated night and day. I don't know all the different violations on it, but what they're doing is trumping up propaganda to try to get in the way of this relationship. And that's precisely what they're doing. Of course, we had the big spy swap on a relationship with Russia, that Russia alleged that certain conservative elements were trying to cause a problem. They were trying to get a reaction, and they wanted to implement a solution to get in the way of this Russia-U.S. newfound love affair in front of this war. And so, of course, they did create a problem. Whatever problem they created, they created a problem with arresting these spies. The reaction it got and the solution was radically different than anyone thought. They just switched spies around, and everyone's huggy-huggy, and it went underneath the rug, and no one even knows the full score behind it. No one knows anything going on or exactly what happened, other than the Russian spies aren't stupid, and you don't really know the full story on anything. You know, they definitely don't run in... they don't run in big groups. But since that, they've tried to also up the ante and get in the way of this this particular vote coming up next week. First week of August, there's supposed to be a vote on this new START treaty. Now, what happens if they do block the vote or something? That's a good question. I don't think they can really do anything. It's been signed by the president. It's going forward whether they do it or not. Whether the Senate passes it or not, or votes on it or hears it, it's basically going forward in somewhat workable manner. Now, it doesn't mean they couldn't cause problems. Russia is basically, it appears that they're dictating terms. Yeah, it appears that Russia is dictating terms on some things in front of this war. That was one of the big scandals that... you know, they weren't going to give anything until certain groups of the Anglo elites got out of the way and gave them what they want. We won't fully understand that until after the war, I'm guessing. But one of the reasons I think the war may happen in front of this election is that Russia can dictate the terms of when the war happens, actually. They have some power over that. They've been able, by dictating the schedule of them not having a green revolution, the Anglo elites having to go to war with Iran, certain elements, the World War III being full on, since they've dictated that it has to happen, how exactly they did that, I'm not quite sure, but they've been working for that the whole time. Since that is happening, they've been able to hold it off enough where they've dictated the timetable. In other words, if there is a war in front of the election wouldn't mean anything. That's the way I take it. But they've been able to dictate that to some extent. You know, they didn't go to war in 2008, they didn't go to war in 2007, but now they gotta go to war, and they gotta go to war soon, apparently. For some reason or another. And I don't expect any of this to fit. The puzzle pieces don't exactly fully go together until after the thing is over and we can see what's going on. Until the thing starts and gets going and until it comes to some fruition, exactly what all they have planned right afterwards. But elements in America will look to get in the way nonstop. Nonstop, they will be getting in the way, and they won't rest until this thing is over. But of course, Putin and company, they continue to work and go to all the meetings with the groups they're working with in Anglosphere to hold back the other groups. So it should be interesting to see if they throw this in front of the election. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. I wouldn't be surprised if Russia didn't dictate that, because they're not going to let conservative elements, so-called conservative elements, and elements that are upset over these big sour grapes on what Russia's been able to do, and what elements in Germany have been able to do. They won't let those sour grapes sow new seeds. So I wouldn't be surprised to see war in front of this election. Will it happen in August? I hope not. I hope they hold off till the fall, but I don't know. They're not going to listen to me. When they're ready to go, they're ready to go. And of course, frontpagemag.com, the Neocon Central. You can go there and see what the neocons think. They're writing articles like Putin's War on Israel. They talk about Putin arming everyone in the area. And then, of course, forcing the war situation. Now that another Middle East war seems imminent, they say, concerns are growing about the new powerful weapons that have been made available to Palestinian terrorists. Yeah, every Palestinian is a terrorist. It doesn't matter who. In fact, everything in the Middle East is a terrorist to Everything that doesn't agree with a neocon is a terrorist, actually. I'll go one step further. It appears to be virtually unknown that these weapons are being steadily supplied by Putin's Russia in the present atmosphere of the everlasting reset of relations between the U.S. and Russia. It is not difficult for the Kremlin to camouflage its arming of terrorists. Indeed, the world is willing to turn a blind eye. Well, it's just no one... Russia has played a game so well to the world, a macro game so well, that everyone respects them, and I don't think Obama cares. And that's going to be Israel's next big problem, actually, to begin with. That's why they're in this mess. This month, for instance, Russia announces making another gift to Palestinian security forces on the West Bank, 50 armored vehicles. Now, this is a great example of the neocons. Russia gives a Palestinian Authority 50 armored vehicles as a gesture. These armored vehicles are not armed. They're just armored vehicles for the police. They don't have guns on them. They've been told they don't have grenade launchers. They're told, but this of course is a huge scandal to the neocons. They say the terrorists are going to use this to run over Israelis. I mean, these people are nuts. They're completely nuts. Now, for all I know, maybe they will. But everything Russia does, I mean, obviously, they're not going to do it that open if they are selling stuff, but they certainly did in front of the last war with Lebanon, so they have some concern. But, of course, under international law, they're allowed to do certain things. Selling weapons is one of them, especially for defensive purposes. And in my next piece, I talk about Russian to some Russian nationalists. I've got a steady stream of questions about Russian nationalism and German soft power. There is no way to know the fullest extent of what they have planned till you see this war go down, which will be sooner rather than later. You know, I don't know when, but it is an if and a when, and what happens right after that. I've tried to help you along this process, and until then, we are on a consistent message. But in the next piece, I talk to the Russian white nationalists, because I am big on Russia on a macro basis, but on a micro basis, we don't have a home anywhere in the world. And they want us to know why many white nationalists like Putin. Well, they don't necessarily know Putin. They don't necessarily know everything going on the ground in Russia, the micro scenario, because Putin doesn't pay attention to micro scenarios in Russia. That's, you got to make it on your own there. What they are referring to is what he's done to some different neocon elements in London and Washington that's been significant. And that's what I pay attention to. I pay attention to whether or not we have a prospect of getting a home and what's going on. But I expect after this war there to be a great deal of confusion, and into that we're going to start seeing things. In other words, the white nationalist parties that are very upset, and they're numerous. There's nothing really micro. It doesn't matter whether in the United Kingdom or France or Germany to get excited about. I expect them to go from being extremely upset about the situation of the world to extremely confused immediately afterwards. And then into that we can sow some new seeds. But in this next piece, I'm talking about Russia to the Russian white nationalists, the different questions I've had. I also talk about German soft power, which is kind of difficult to describe for certain reasons, and I go into that. And then the final piece is on a very significant news event. I get tons of emails about my positions on Russia, on some of the stuff I pointed out. And it is actually more controversial to the conservative, maybe white nationalist, than any other group. Very controversial, because it is not necessarily what you see is what you get until you step back and you look at it in a broader perspective of what Russia's going for, what their objectives are. If you just look at Putin's last moves, in 2007, he meets with Kissinger and company, and all these Anglo elites roll out the package for their New World Order. He basically shows them the door. He blocks a green revolution in Iran, or helped block it. That was the Anglo elites all over. They had to have a green revolution in Iran to keep them going to war. Then he's busy running around selling weapons to the enemies of Israel and everything else to piss off all the Israelis. But, of course, he points out that they sold weapons and to Georgia and whatnot. He's doing all kinds of stuff that's contradictory and confusing. But nothing is more contradictory than not accepting a New World Order package from Kissinger and company in 2007. And then turning around once already builds nuclear power plants in Iran, he turns around and decides that Iran is kind of dangerous. After he foils the Green Revolution, he turns around and figures that Iran is dangerous once certain Anglo elites decide that World War III is on. Once World War III is on, then he starts meeting with them, but not before. Very confusing stuff. Because if he wanted to have this big package, if he wanted to work with America, why didn't he just go with Kissinger in 2006, 2007 when they're begging him, doing all this kind of stuff? So we're going to talk a little bit about this confusing stuff. But let's go back over Putin, his rise to power. Because I've been asked, when did my attention first turn to him? And to be honest with you, he's just one man. He's done some very interesting things on a macro level. He has done nothing on a micro level inside Russia. Very little. Nothing that would make a white nationalist happy. In fact, just the opposite. He's done nothing on a micro level in any white country, period, that would make a white nationalist or a conservative or anyone else excited. Everything he's done is on a macro basis, and I'm very macro-oriented. So let's go over a broad overview. The biggest question, of course, let's do an overview, and then I'll come back. So Kissinger and company have been over there, and they've tried to get this deal with Putin for their New World Order. And he's played them like a flute, basically. He's done everything possible to block their control of Iran and force a war. Now, it's become clear of late with the machinations I just mentioned that are right in front of our face, that he's banked on war the whole time, World War III. And and obviously he's been playing for it a long time. And he's arming everyone and anyone in the area, doing all kinds of crazy contradictory things. But when he first came to power, when he first came to my attention, was when he was in St. Petersburg. He was running stuff in St. Petersburg for Subkov. And, of course, someone like Putin, you don't know what he's going to do until it's already done. But we'll get to that in a minute when it first became clear that he was going to be a point man for something larger than himself, something larger than Russia, at least in my opinion. In being a front man for Subkov, he handled all these business arrangements, and Russia was in dire straits. And my macro analysis does not lend itself to all micro facts and figures and dates. Usually I can pull stuff like that up, but I'm going to do a brief overview. But basically, he did an oil for food deal almost with German businesses. Russia was in trouble, but Russia had all kinds of, or St. Petersburg was in trouble. They were on the eve of starvation, or so he said. I wasn't there at the time, so I don't know. Things were pretty bad at the time. And so what he said was, we have all this oil, we're going to do some trade with German business direct trade. We're going to trade oil for food and goods. You might remember that. I don't know the exact date. I'm fuzzy on that. But in reality, that's when he first came to my attention. Not that he did anything special, but the fact that German businesses, a particular set of German businesses, responded like lightning to his call for help in St. Petersburg when he called them for help. I posted a special on my Twitter. If you go to the website, Little Russians, you can find my Twitter. There's a Canadian special. There's a Canadian special about Putin. And it is accurate in describing his moves. It is also accurate in describing this oil for food type deal that he ran from St. Petersburg. But it came to my attention, not that he was doing anything special, because he was an old KGB operative, and Subkov needed someone like him, and he was very good at working out deals with businesses and helping out, and he's always been loyal to Subkov. If I'm doing his name justice, I may not be doing Subkov's name justice because my Russian is horrible, and that's when he first came to my attention. And then, of course, he's had all these moves over to his liberal group in St. Petersburg caught the attention of some of the oligarchs, and he's worked his way up. And as he worked his way up, everyone always remembered those German businesses responding to him. And the next thing that comes to mind is basically, you know, the oligarchs had this big problem because none of them had any connections to the KGB, or which was becoming the modern FSB. They didn't have any connections. And Putin had done favors, various different favors for various different groups. He always made himself available. If there's a problem, he was always there with the solution. But it became kind of funny when he got to Moscow and the stuff he was doing. It became kind of entertaining that I believe it was Anatoly Chubais that was the first of the St. Petersburg group to get called into Moscow to actually go on to Moscow to work for Yeltsin. And a couple years later, Putin would stand to benefit also, and several other of the St. Petersburg colleagues. But, you know, Putin worked his way up and ended up in in Dropov's old position at the KGB. And at this time, he has a... And so he worked his way up to the head of the FSB, and he was like the lowest rank. That's what got attention. They had to put him in the FSB. He had made a name for himself of basically solving problems for the oligarchs and for the oligarch stoolies. And they put him he ended up at the top of the FSB at the low rank as like a colonel. He wasn't a general. He had Andropov's position, but was nowhere near the title. In fact, I don't think anyone has ever had that position at the FSB without a title of like a general or something. But that's also when he came to attention. No one knew what problems were created, and I still don't know to this day who was creating Matt all these problems. But he was the one, with the solutions. Consistently. And all, it's not the big things, it's the little things that add up, but one of the big things was, if you remember correctly, when he really got the show going, is when I think it was Primakov, the oligarchs had this huge problem in Russia. There was a perception problem, and the problem of their wealth had created a reaction. They were hated. And that reaction, they wanted to implement a solution. They wanted to, believe it or not, they wanted to have someone investigate the oligarchs and maybe hang someone else out to dry. And so Yeltsin tells, I think it was Primakov, to appoint a prosecutor. And so Primakov appoints a prosecutor to start looking at things. Well, this prosecutor starts looking at Yeltsin. He starts looking at the corruption of Yeltsin himself. Forget all the other oligarchs. They're looking at Yeltsin. Now, I don't know whether that's intentional or whether Yeltsin was picked to be the fall guy. I don't know, which is very possible. I mean, Yeltsin was a drunk. He was a stoolie. He wasn't completely ignorant. He knew something was up. But at the same time, he is a front for these oligarchs, and the whole place is destroyed. He was worried about corruption charges or who knows, treason charges. He was worried about all kinds of problems, right? Because he's definitely violated a few Russian laws, and Russia law at that time was even more gray, was at the grayest point, was actually one gray area under the Yeltsin regime. And so he freaks out, and he calls Putiput in. What is known is he's called Putiput in, and Putiput comes in there, and he said, "We got this problem. This prosecutor's investigating me. You know, I'm a sitting head of state. They're not investigating the oligarchs; they're investigating me. For all I know, the oligarchs may have planned it that way. They may have planned on getting rid of Yeltsin and replacing him with someone else, and letting him be the fall guy for their disgusting wealth. You know, give the crowds in Russia some oligarch meat, and that would be Yeltsin's head or something. Who knows? But what we do know is that Putiput and his FSB friends immediately respond. In other words, there's a prosecutor created this huge problem. That's a reaction. Yeltsin's getting investigated. He freaks out. And they created a solution. The solution was, you might remember correctly, is that prosecutor got found in bed all over Russian TV with two prostitutes, two Russian prostitutes. I believe they were Russian. They were white girls. But he was on all these television channels that the FSB set up a sting, a prostitution sting, and he was it. So that prosecutor gets removed. You know, he's embarrassed. He has problems with his family. You can only imagine. This problem of this prosecutor investigating Yeltsin goes away. And Yeltsin, of course, that's shortly thereafter he appointed Putiput. He handed the reins of power over to Putin. There was no election, but he handed the reins of power. Putin and company were starting to run things long before that. Obviously, whoever was making all those problems at the FSB to get him appointed to the top of the FSB, they were definitely concerned. The oligarchs were that they didn't have someone like Putin that could be taken seriously among the old KGB set. Well, but he is consistently, they are consistently causing problems, and he is consistently coming up with a solution. You know, he's Mr. Solution Provider since day one, and looking like a genius. And so shortly thereafter, he's at the head of Russia, and what's funny is Berezovsky, the one that's running around, Boris Berezovsky, you know, the one that ran over into London, he was promoting Putin. He loved Putin. Yes, he loved him. But the really, we didn't know anything about Putin. No one knew exactly what was going to happen. It was clear that something was going on because of the reaction among all the old guard. We're getting ready to do something big. You might remember when his cards came out, when he revealed his cards to the world, is when Gazprom called the loan. He, as a sitting head of state of Russia now, calls the loan for NTV. Gazprom, I believe it was Gazprom, had loaned, the oligarchs do business, no different than the other oligarch do business. You know, they all loan each other money. And NTV, Guzinski's NTV, and all his media empire was based on a loan from Gazprom. So Putipu did something very simple. He just called the loan. That's all he did was call the loan. And his whole entire empire collapsed because they couldn't repay it. And then he's running around like a gay schoolboy over in Spain or London or wherever else saying he's being persecuted and all that stuff. But they got rid of him really quick. And that's when panic broke out. That's when Berezovsky, didn't right away, but he started taking and opposing, you know, they were worried about Putin. And Berezovsky, of course, took an opposing view. I think it was over that big submarine. You remember the submarine? Kursk maybe was the name of it. Berezovsky said some things about Putin on camera. It was used as media. Instead of helping Putin, he turned against Putin. And Putin took the daggers out and clubbed him like a baby seal. And he went off like a little gay schoolboy running over there in London too. And you have these incidents that came up. But those are pretty much an overview of how Putipu came to power. And since then, of course, most of his moves are macro. He's not doing anything inside Russia except making sure his pipelines stay active, his big weapon of energy. He's making sure the weapons factory stays active. He's making sure they're selling weapons, they're selling natural gas and oil. That's what he's doing. But on a local level, the question is, if he is a Russian nationalist, which is basically what he is, why are they letting all these groups, from Europe, why is this message been co-opted of multiculturalism, or why is he even giving lip service? Why doesn't he just cut their heads off or do what the white nationalists want, big torchlight parades and announce a Fourth Reich or Fifth Reich and all that kind of stuff? Because that's not the game they're playing. Obviously, if he could cut heads off, he would have cut heads off the oligarchs instead of throwing them out of the country or having them run around. Obviously, if he could walk around hanging people, if he wasn't concerned about his country, they could have dragged Yeltsin through tribunals and through hearings and through court cases and pretty much probably destroyed Russia. But putting Yeltsin on trial would have destroyed Russia at the time. Russia was too unstable. So, as a nationalist, he's just not going to operate like that. He can't. They're playing a different game. And what's become clear is he's playing into this war. They've been going for this war the whole entire time. I'll try to go forward and answer some questions, but you have to understand that he can't combat a consistent message coming out of the OECD, coming out of Europe, because that consistent message was put in place from billions of dollars post-World War II by Anglosphere. And he can't combat the consistent message in Anglosphere because of the outrageous media power of Hollywood. And there's also another little factor. No closed society has been combated from outside that closed society. In other words, if there's a closed society that says, racism exists in only white children's homes, white children's schools, white children's churches, and that contradiction, a closed society is like you lived in long ago in the Soviet Union. that scientific materialism is great, and any disagreement with that, you get shot in the head. Well, there's a new cold society, you know, multiculturalism, multiracialism in white countries, and only white countries is great, and if you disagree, you're shot in the head. You can't combat that within Russia. Until it's being combated in Anglosphere. Why? Because that's where it originated. You can't bring down communism until you bring down the Soviet Union. That's where it originated. So there's really nothing they can do except co-opt it and try to manage it and give it lip service and all this other games they play, none of which are good on the ground. You can do nothing until there's a consistent message. Why? Because a consistent message combats it on the ground. I mean, if you're saying multiculturalism is good, well, you have to have a consistent message to combat that. And in this case, you're going to have a consistent message that goes west to east, just like the particular damaged goods. The Russians are calling it, he listens to political cesspool, they call it cultural Marxism over there. Yeah, it's cultural Marxism, but they didn't originate it in Russia. Did not come from Russia. So that is the only process. And to combat an Anglosphere, you have to wait for a new media about 15 years. And then once that new media comes out 15 years, you're going to have a consistent message that goes against it. And then it starts spreading like wildfire and undermines the system. Once the system collapses in the Anglosphere, it'll collapse in Europe, the OECD, and everything else. It's just like communism. Once communism collapsed in the Soviet Union, you know, everywhere else, Cuba can call itself communist. It's not communist anymore, really. Once communism collapsed in the Soviet Union, it was over with. But there's no way to collapse communism anywhere outside of Russia. It's kind of a waste of time. It's going to grow back. So there's really nothing they can do. You might remember Alexander Dugin. He's pretty much a fine thinker. Alexander Dugin at one time sounded like a Russian nationalist. His economic policy still is. Alexander Dugin, I don't know whether it was mid-90s, as early as mid-90s, started co-opting this multiculturalism, multiracial nonsense. That's really the only thing you can do is co-opt it and divert an energy flow. Let me give you an example since you watch some American TV. On American TV, we have a show called CNBC. It's about finance. It's about business. There's a guy on the show named Jim Cramer. He is Pink Rabbit Bankster's and Elitester go-to boy on the finance deal. But he will come out against Goldman Sachs, his old employer, and call them Darth Vader. He will come out and sound like this stuff has gone way too far on derivatives. He will come out and say, you know, go against ostentatious living and everything else. He will come out and sound like a hard ass against the Federal Reserve System and saying the Federal Reserve System needs to be investigated and reined in. Does he believe any of this? No. No, he's just playing a game. He's playing a game for them. He's controlled opposition. He's basically trying to co-opt. They can't co-opt. They can't do anything about all this stuff in America about the Federal Reserve. So they have one of their go-to boys co-opting the message. What does he do? He gives it lip service. What becomes of it? Nothing. 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 In Russia, of course, there's a few other devastating facts, right? You have a large Eurasian population that is on the border that can come in there. In fact, Russia has more potential immigrants overnight than anywhere in the world simply because of massive landmass, right? You can have them flooding into Moscow. That is a big concern for Putin and company. On top of that, if you gave them separate states, you have another security concern. Long term, they may do something like that, but that's obvious. They're not thinking 2050. They're thinking about war 2010 to 2011. You know, that type of thing, war before 2012. That's obviously what they've been playing into the whole time by their actions. But it is frustrating on a local level because you have no way, there's no way they're going to pay attention to anything unless you're operating under the rules in front of you. For the same reason, Putin's not going to get away with cutting the heads off oligarchs. He's got to throw them in jail. He's got to operate under the rules. Why is it like that? I don't know. Maybe the sun, moon, and stars. Maybe there's a little Jewish alien god sitting in London making up the rules. I do not know. We will find out, though, why all this crazy nonsense. But there is one thing you can do. You can be on a consistent message now. You cannot, Putin cannot control anything from the OECD. All he can do is bitch about it. He cannot control any of the messages emanating from Europe. All he can do is bitch about it. You cannot control any of the media emanating from Anglosphere. All he can do is bitch about it and wait for a consistent message to come out. Once a consistent message comes out, he still can't do anything or help you do anything until that's on the streets in Moscow and on the streets in St. Petersburg. Now, once that message that is, the message of multiculturalism, multiracialism was in Russia before Putin came to power. It came in with the fall of the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union come down, they start filtering this nonsense in from the West. Well, it's been there for a long time. But it started filtering in, and culturally it was already starting to try to set up. It wasn't set up like America or anything like that. They had skinheads running around doing all kinds of stuff back in the good old days. But there's nothing he could do to combat that cultural attaché. You're asking me why isn't he developing? Because he can't. It doesn't work that way. You can't take down the Soviet Union from America. You got to take down the Soviet Union by taking down the Berlin Wall and take it down in the Soviet Union. You can't take down this cultural Marxist regime, as you call it, in Anglosphere without taking it down in Anglosphere, and he cannot do that. He has to wait for the process. It takes 15 years just to neutralize a demoralized society. If you listen to my whole entire podcast, or at least parts of it, it takes 15 years with a new media or a change in media or a radical change in textbooks and everything else. There's nothing he can do except co-opt and give it lip service and wait for a consistent message. Now, once a consistent message is on the ground in Moscow and St. Petersburg, once you're fighting fire with fire, once all those cultural attachés that talk with the OECD and all the human rights groups, well then and only then will you know who's your friend and who's your enemy in Russia. There's nothing they can do about it. My guess is they will try to co-opt it very quickly because it's good to have healthy debate about these things as long as you're operating under the rules. If you're running around cutting off heads, they're not going to do it for the same reason he's not cutting off heads. It doesn't work that way. Tragic but true. They're going to make you play underneath the rules, and if you don't, they're going to bust your heads. That's the way it works. Now, you're mentioning that some policemen get away with whatever. Yeah, they work for the system. If you're in the system, you and somewhere like Russia and Connect, I'm sure you can get away with all kinds of things. But if you're on a consistent message, you will pay attention. You have to pay attention to such things. You're asking if they know we exist? Of course. Of course. All kinds of people know we exist. But it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And to be honest with you, the micro situation in Russia was in place long before he came to power. He was fighting for Russia's life, and then he's fighting to put down the neocon New World Order, and then he's fighting, obviously, he's fighting to push certain elements in Anglosphere into a war and helping out other elements in Germany and Russia. I mean, Germany and Anglosphere, so he's doing a lot. He doesn't have time to deal with that stuff on a local level, and it's not his job. Consistent message is not his job. That's your job. That's your job, but that has to come from west to east. That's not your fault. And in America, you have such a demoralized society that it took 15 years of something as radical as the internet to even get them asking questions. And so that's why you're hearing me now, right? You know, the internet came out in 95, it's 2010, it's 15 years. You started hearing me last year. But you can't do anything in Russia to make yourself a problem. They won't allow that. They won't allow National Socialism to something like that to take hold. And they certainly wouldn't in the 90s. Like, you're like, why didn't they support this group or that group? Well, most of those groups were funded by groups in Anglosphere who were trying to prop up neo-Nazism or National Socialism in Russia. Why? They're trying to create a problem. They're creating a problem to get a reaction, a global reaction, so they can implement a solution and destroy Russia at the time that is very critical. They're not going to allow them to do that. They're going to have Dugin out there. Dugin will do a 180 and start talking about things that don't make any sense. And maybe he is a bonehead. I don't know. I don't know the guy personally. But that is in a nutshell. It's not your fault, but a consistent message works wonders, and it works at the local level. That's where it starts. But it can't go anywhere in Russia until it ends the nonsense or starts ending the nonsense in Anglosphere, and that's what's happening. That's why you're hearing it. Now, once it starts spreading like it is across Northern Europe, then across Europe, and then across Russia, then and only then can it be neutral. You cannot neutralize the type of fire that has been thrown at Europe and thrown by the Anglo elites, elements of the social engineering schools that have spent billions. You can't neutralize that completely with just a few textbooks by him putting his foot down and closing the doors or cutting off heads. It doesn't work that way. You neutralize it with an opposing message. That's it. And they will indulge that because you're playing by the rules. But they will not allow you to do anything that you want to do. Your first instincts are going to defend yourself or go this or go that or put your foot down and you want to hang Putin and you want to hang the world and you want torchlight parades. That ain't going to work this time. They're obviously playing a totally different game. And you can be upset. You can say they're traitors until we see otherwise. That's fine. But you have something to do on a local level. You can be on a consistent message. If you have a group in Russia and you're on a consistent message, they will take you very seriously. If you're not, they will not take you very seriously. Because without a consistent message, you can go nowhere. That's why the Kremlin spends such money, it spends fortunes on a consistent message. Because it works. You say this type of thing doesn't work, and you're saying exactly what a lot of people, what I first said at first. Well, sound doesn't work because, well, how do you get, how does it affect all those people? The masses are at, well, that's why it works. It works because the masses are asses, Little Russian. That's why it works. Tragic but true. We are susceptible to electromagnetics. We're susceptible to electromagnetic energy that sound gives off. You know, it's like that Russian group Tattoo singing, "Not Gonna Get Us." You know, you can't overcome that. But until there is a consistent message to oppose that multicultural, multiracial, pro-white genocide message emanating from Europe seeping into Russia that is now, it's taken a cultural hold. It took a cultural hold in certain departments in Russia before Putin had any dream of getting into power. As soon as the wall came down, because it was such a force in the West. And it's such a force in the media, which you guys all craved, right? But you can't do anything about that until there's a consistent message to oppose it. And that is a process. And that process is ongoing. So, personally to me, I don't care if the whole entire top of Anglosphere, the whole entire top of Western civilization, and Russia for that matter, all go down in flames. That's fine. I'm worried about getting a home. But if you're saying that the only way out, that Putin... it doesn't make sense why certain white nationals like him or worship him. Well, they're not talking about anything macro, micro. They're not talking about anything he's done micro because he hasn't done anything micro. What they're talking about is that he laid open he laid open some of the neocon oligarchs like they were salmon. He laid them wide open. And that had huge ramifications in London, and that huge ramifications in Washington, and that's what they find funny. And so do I. I think it's hilarious. I think you did a brilliant job on them. Perfect? No. You won't be happy, even if I were to put some white nationalists, and you seem to be the type, you want total perfection. If I were to put you on a colony on Mars that was all white and totally perfect, you'd find problems with that too. And that's fine. If you weren't such a perfectionist, you wouldn't be a white rabbit, and I'd have a whole new set of rabbit race issues to deal with. But come back to me once this war happens. Come back to me and look at the games Putin's playing. Look at it from a macro perspective, not necessarily a micro perspective. Now, on a micro level, the nationalist groups, the racial groups, whatever in Russia, I don't care if you disguise yourself as animal rights. You can be on a consistent message. You will go places. You've said no one in our group has ever been to Russia. They don't know what's going on. You're full of it. You're full of it. If you're on a consistent message, David Duke, Dr. Duke, sells books all over the Duma. Yeah, he sells books in the Duma. He sells books all over Russia. Why is he allowed to speak there? Because he's not breaking any rules. He's playing on the rules. He's not going to advocate any violence. He's not going to advocate anything to create instability in the regime. You can do that with a consistent message all day long. Now, his consistent message is the Jews and genocide sometimes. Our consistent message is is white rabbit genocide. That's just our spiel. But to put it quite simple, his job is not necessarily to fight multiculturalism. He cannot do that. The only thing he can do is keep Russia alive and do his job for whatever crew he's working for. Now, there are some that have written me and say he's a total tool of German soft power. Well, I wouldn't say that. He's an asset. He's not a tool. He's an asset. A tool does what he's told. He's an asset. And most, you got another group of listeners that don't even understand German soft power. Understanding German soft power in 2010, helping you understand that would be like me going back in time and helping someone understand Jewish power in the 1960s. Yeah, most Americans didn't believe in Jewish power in the 1960s. The Jews were at the height of power. The height of their soft power was the 1960s. Hard power is putting your fist down someone's throat. Soft power is the ability to entice people into your ideals, to get things done without conflict. And that's a short explanation. That's a short explanation. You can look it up. I'm sure there's wikis for soft power and hard power. But, German soft power is epic. It's epic because most people don't know it exists. That's why it is epic. It is kind of wide sky, but many, more and more are finding out about it. I'm sure in 2020, German soft power will be well known, well entrenched, and will be will be very easy to understand. But portions of our group have been in Russia. I think old Bob himself spent almost a month there after Putin came to power. I don't know whether it was post 2011. I think it was post September 2011. I don't know who he met with there or what he was doing there. None of my business. But don't say we don't know that things are bad on the ground in Russia. We know. We know very well. Things are bad for every nationalist group on this planet. Open borders are all over this planet. Russia is just another country, but a very critical country. Then Putin's done quite a number on my enemy. But he hasn't done anything on a micro level to combat multiculturalism, multiracial, simply because he cannot. There's nothing he can do. Other than try to seal the borders, declare war, and Rojava, and that ain't going to work. They're obviously playing a different game. He's just from his move in the past 3 years on Iran alone, he's obviously playing for World War III. So we'll wait and see right afterwards, and I'm sure right afterwards you're going to get a few answers to the equation. At least once you're probably going to be first very confused. Most white nationalists will be very confused after World War III, and then you'll start getting answers to the questions. In regards to Africans, why do they? You know, the more emails I get globally are why are all these countries? Because now it's in Asia, now it's in China. Allowing open borders and allowing Africans to come and call themselves citizens. China has African citizens now. Some kind of African citizen pass. I don't know. I don't understand that at all. China, every once in a while, they get beat up, but more flood in there. They have this huge group. They have a whole city now that's Africans, and the Chinese can't stand them. And they're like, you know, but there's really nothing you can do about multiculturalism, multiracialism, and this scientific this cultural Marxism until it ends in the place that began it. But the indulgence of Africans like little children all over the world, South America, they're there. You know, they're the largest group on the planet. There's more Africans now than anyone else, by a long shot. And they are spreading out because they have all failed societies. and they drive, I've never seen a group drive so many different cultures and so many different races nuts like the black rabbits. It's like they're polar opposite. Polar opposite the rest of humanity, but they don't want them there, and maybe they're going extinct in a couple of years, and they're just going to be nice to them for a little bit to give them like a, you know, it's kind of like they do to in America if someone's on death row, they feed you a steak or they feed you your last meal, and your last meal can be anything you want. You can eat steak and lobster and whatever. Why? Because they're putting you in the gas chamber tomorrow. I'm sorry, not the gas chamber. That was another group, but they're giving the murderer the electric chair tomorrow. Maybe it's one of those scenarios. You know, racial karma. They're treating them nicely because they're going to go extinct. I don't know what the deal is with Africans, other than the whole world's sick of them now, which is a problem in itself. South America, they're sick of them. China, they're sick of them. Russia doesn't have them. You know, Americans would love to trade their African problem for the Russian African problem. but everyone's getting their belly full of the little African rabbits. But I don't know why that is. Maybe their little alien god is sitting with the Jew alien god in London getting to make all these crazy rules. But we're gonna see the end of it, as this war comes about, which may have started already. The shooting war may have actually started. I don't know. But Putin plays a lot of games. More games than anything anyone's ever seen. And he's running the German long-term strategy. Our enemy got caught flat-footed. They thought they had 100 years after World War II, apparently at a minimum. Most of their statistics they kicked out in Russia was for 2050, 2045, 2050. In America, if you go to the white nationalist groups, all the different social engineers kick out these 2050 numbers. The problem for our enemy is that they didn't have the 2050. They had to probably 1998, 2000 at the latest. And their critical time was probably the crash of 1987 in America. Ever since then, they've had problems, and that's what's going on. And Kissinger, why would Kissinger go over to cut a deal instead of other neocons? Well, Kissinger has more to lose than the other neocons, and Kissinger's more in the know. Kissinger knows a lot more than those other little neocons. And Kissinger doesn't necessarily agree with the neocons, but he is more pragmatic. He's more pragmatic because he can be in tribunals anywhere on the planet. So getting a deal with Russia was always a big deal. What the terms were, I don't know. I'm guessing we're going to find out. Hopefully, Putin has set up the whole enchilada. But we'll see soon. There's your answer. You'll see soon. You're going to know this soon enough. But you can be on a consistent message. Until you're on a consistent message, until there's a consistent message to be on, there's nothing he can do to combat the OECD, to combat this white genocide machine that came out of Anglosphere post-World War II and across Europe. There's nothing he can do except smile, placate it, and do all this crazy nonsense they do, and try to co-opt the energy flow to make sure it's not too damn damaging before they get World War III. Right? That's all he can do. That's all he can do. Now, once you're on a consistent message, then you know who's friendly and who's naughty and who's nice. Then you know who there is just talking and who there is seriously interested. I'm sure they'll let you engage in all kinds of debates. I'm sure they'll do that, but you're going to have to operate under the rules. You have to operate with decorum. They're not going to let you cut off cameras on YouTube and then get all the five thousand human rights organization calls every day. As far as the Jews are all over Russia now, yeah, the Jew rabbits got kicked out of positions of power, positions of decision making. I mean, they're still going to find some in the media. You're going to still find a few oligarchs around there. And you're probably going to have a growing number of oligarch Jews to be that came in there, post-Putin taking power. You're going to have all different kinds of Jewish groups still in the different cultural departments. They're not causing problems. They're subversive. They look for opportunities to cause problems. In other words, they don't run around being anti-Putin, just the opposite. They operate quite naturally on a deceptive basis. And of course they're stacking the deck trying to figure out a way to get back in decision making because Putin of course Russia's caused problems just by being fair in the Middle East. And that's kind of common sense, with what happened with Lebanon, with what happened with Palestine, the fact that he entertains Hamas, they can't stand that. And Putin has also caused problems because you don't have a new world order without Russia. You have to agree with something with Russia. Now, if America would have been taken over by certain groups before something like Putin came into Russia, well, the neocons, the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters that I call them would have had a whole new problem. Putin and company the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters would have had a whole new set of concerns. They would have had a whole new set of concerns, and it would have just been the other way around. But there are certain groups playing into World War III, and it's obvious to me that was going to happen one way or another. And they don't really care about anything micro on the ground. You know, they're not solving any rashes until they get rid of the cancer. That's something I went over before on separate podcasts, but as far as the Russians and the micro situation, it's horrible all over the place. You should be some places in America. But this is a time on the calendar where we're going to get big breaks. Whether or not you see them coming or whether or not you respond to them is another story, but you got to get out of that funk. There's nothing we can do, or there's only one way to go, and that's, and Putin and company is always looking for someone to solve problems. This is a big problem, not having an opposing message to the multicultural, multiracial nonsense. It's always been a problem. The only reaction and the only solution he can do is co-opt it. He can't fight it. There is no fighting a machine like that. You've got to let it run its course and a consistent message come in from the place where it originated, which is America and the UK. But if you're on a consistent message, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised. Now, the type of moves he did are not natural to white rabbits. Even if you just watch the CBC special, the Canadian Broadcasting special, the type of techniques I talk about aren't natural to a lot of white rabbits. They want to stand up. They want everything to be fair and cushy. They want all this to be, on the up and up like it was in the 1950s in America. That ain't going to happen right now. Sorry. You're going to have to operate with under the rules, and you're going to have to do things you may not like being on a consistent message. You know, a lot of parties, even as far as Russia, has been surprised on how this thing has spread in Anglosphere.
But it's time, you know. Putting white rabbits on a consistent message is called herding cats because it's that difficult. It's that difficult. But once it starts to work, that's all it takes. It only takes one in every area. You know, if you're not good at being on a consistent message, get one of your other little Russian buddies. Put him on or her on a consistent message. Let her know how it works. There'll be one in every group that's good at yapping. That's all you need. But they will take it very, very serious. But if you're not operating under the rules, they will not take you serious. If you're a danger to the system or you're causing them problems with all these human rights groups, in other words, you're doing something violent and getting caught, they're not going to be able to do anything except lock you down. That's it. Now, if you're combating the human rights groups in the OEC by with opposing message like ours, well, that's a whole different ball game. That's a whole different ball game. You know, you're confused because they crack down on all these groups, but they only crack down on groups that advocate violence, or that are fielding calls about 1,000 times a day from all these crazy wild animals, these human rights groups, these so-called human rights groups. That's all they're doing. They're not cracking down on anyone on a consistent message because this is, you know, it's just the way it works. I'm sorry if you don't like it. There's nothing you're going to do about it except accept it, or if you're not, if this isn't your cup of tea, you go to your dasha and sit by the lake and drink vodka and wait for World War III, which, you know, may be started already by the time you hear this. But there's no other way. There is just no other way. So the reason, quite simply, that he doesn't step in front of the multicultural multiracialism, there's no possible way for him to do that. All he can do is co-opt it and wait for the consistent message to come online. And that consistent message has nothing to do with you. It actually has nothing to do with the average white European in America, because guess what? You have a massive machine that had to be neutralized with the new media. We have the most radical new media in the history of the world, the internet, but that even some of that radical takes 15 years. So it's no one's really it's no one's fault. It's just the way it works. It's the way it works. But hopefully I answered that question. But in regards to German soft power, describing German soft power, and I'll say this one more time right now, is like going back in time and describing Jewish power in the 60s. No one's going to believe it. Most Jewish power, when Jews were at their greatest power, people wanted to work with them. People were attracted to their ideals. They weren't sticking a fist down people's face, at least in front of the cameras. Most of the Third World thought that the Israeli position was equality and all this nonsense that they believed. They found out differently. But the Jews were at the height of their power in the 60s. That's when they were height of the power, when people didn't know how much soft power they had. When people were attracted to them. Now no one's attracted to them. No one's attracted to them. No one at all. And now, on the other hand, a lot of people want to work with Russia. You know, a lot of people are attracted to them, and that is in essence soft power. But you can do nothing in this type of system except combat it with an opposing message. And you must do that from a professional standpoint and have a professional write the message. And that's what you have over at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. As far as Putin this or Putin that, they have done nothing on a micro level for any Russian to be happy with. I understand that. I understand that at all. He's not going to until this war. They're not going to. If anything, he's just going to give it lip service, and that's all they're doing. If you look at the Council of Foreign Relations, there was a senator there, Senator John Edwards. He wrote a 50-page report about just that, about that all they're doing is playing games with us. And of course, the Wesley Clark spoke up and said, "Yeah, he's killing our New World Order." Well, that's what he did. He killed at least that version of it, basically moving them into position. For what? We'll soon see. But he's not the only character on the stage. He's not the only character in Russia with a lot of power. He's just the one you're going to see and focus on. But getting mad and fomenting on everything else, well, that it may be relevant because of what they're doing or what they're not doing, but it's much more relevant to be part of the solution and get on a consistent message or get someone who understands how this stuff works. You know, believe me, if you have a message to oppose all this nonsense, they'll give it lip service. That's all they've ever wanted. That's what they've been dying for. Because Russia is attached to some of the biggest land masses in the world, and you can do nothing about them coming in there right now. You know, you can do nothing about these immigrant groups running across the border. It doesn't matter if you're in China or anywhere else. Why? I don't know. I don't know who got to make that rule and why, but someone did. And I've talked about this in other parts of the broadcast. But that's that on the Q&A on Russia. Hopefully I answered your questions, but I expect to see big breaks after this war. I've said this the whole time. And I think everything's shaping up for us quite well. We're just going to have to roll with a few punches here. But you can be on a consistent message, and that's it. That's it. There is no combating a multicultural, multiracial message without having an opposing message, a consistent message, an opposing consistent message. You're not going to combat it. They'll let you fight in the streets all day long. Well, actually, they may not even do that anymore. They're cracking down all over the place, especially as they come into this war, you know. But in the next part, I'm going to glance over a huge event in regarding King Tut. And King Tut is a pretty funny story because he turns out to be white. And the answers I got, you see, Zari Hawass, the head of the Egyptian Antiquities, he is Team Pink Rabbit. Yes, he is. Zari Hawass. He has a great deal of power in Egypt. In fact, he can get anything done because he has all kinds of buddies in the West. That's how Team Pink Rabbit operates. But this fool has had a dispute with the Germans over the bust for Nefertiti. And so he wanted the bust for Nefertiti, and he's fired letters off the Germans. The Germans tell him to screw off. So this idiot sends the DNA and all this stuff to the Germans for Tut. Now, he always said he was never going to do any DNA checks for race on any of the Egyptian mummies because DNA testing was inaccurate for race or something like that. It wasn't. Now, of course, he didn't have a problem with it when it comes to finding out who King Tut was related to. But when it comes to finding out his race, he thought it was inaccurate, which is kind of interesting. But anyways, he sends it to the Germans and. And of course, the exact quote from the Christian Science Monitor here is, this is the first time someone did something like this with phrenic DNA. And that's Karsten Pusch, associate professor at Institute of Human Genetics at University of, off the top of my head, Tübingen in Germany, who worked on the study, and that's Tübingen. We have shown it possible to work with the DNA of mummies, and now we have opened the door. Behind the door, there's a new universe waiting for us. And so basically, this sick young white kid that died, that everyone's made a big deal over all these years, that they built this huge multicultural, multiracial cult around Egypt, basically. And he was such a big deal because they found all his goods. It comes out that he's white, and they sent his stuff to the Germans. Why would they send his stuff to the Germans to do any type of DNA testing? Because they know his race is going to come out. I mean, he's always, Zari Hawass said that he's never going to do that. He's never going to cooperate on that. Probably for the same reason the Germans have said they're never going to return the bust to Nefertiti. They don't see eye to eye on things. So why did he do that? The answer is rather provocative, and I'm going to talk about that in the next piece because it's kind of funny. He sends it to these German researchers. Of all the researchers to send it to, maybe he thought they were Team Pink Rabbit or something. I don't know, but the answer there is an answer. The answer is kind of entertaining, and that'll be the last and final piece of this podcast. And that's coming up next, where I talk about this. We have a fascinating event that has just occurred. And I mean a fascinating event. We have a young pharaoh. And the young pharaoh has always had a questionable identity. Not because of the pharaoh himself. There's nothing really special about young King Tut. Except one thing. They found all his treasure. There are some other issues with Tut. The issues with Tut have been the circumstances surrounding Tut, the Akhenatens, the Nefertiti. Zari Hawass, who heads the Egyptian Antiquities, is Team Pink Rabbit. Yes, he is. And he has been fighting with Germany over getting the Nefertiti bust back, saying it was stolen and everything like this. The Hyksos, you remember the Hyksos were in Egypt around this time. You have all these controversial characters in Egypt and surrounding. So King Tut himself has never been a big deal. The Akhenatens, the monotheistic Akhenatens, all the mystery in the court of the Ramses III, which happened, you know, this whole entire time period, is in question. And in the court of Ramses III, there was a big conspiracy by one of his brides to murder him. It was a big deal. It's in the court documents there. Why is it a big deal when the Hyksos come in and overthrow a king? You know, the Hyksos were kicked out of Egypt and they came in. They came in through a corrupt priest. The ominous priest was subverted. The ominous priesthood was subverted, and then they eventually overthrew and took over for 300 years and totally destroyed the place. Yeah, Egypt was never the same. There's a simple reason for that. The king makes all laws. Yeah, the pharaoh makes all laws. And so really you're basing, and also the priest class had an enormous amount of power. Outrageous amount of power. If I were to talk about the type of power the priest class has, you wouldn't even believe it. And so they decided all the laws, this priest class and the pharaoh, and everything worked out very well. They never had any problem with it. For instance, you would go into a temple, and you would talk to a big falcon god, yours truly, you talk to a big statue, the statue would have a hole through the back going into some back room, and one of the powerful ominous priests, you would ask a prayer, and he would answer you, and offer you some guidance. Straight from the gods. Well, you know, it worked. It worked for thousands of years. But the pharaoh had so much power, there's no written laws in Egypt that we know of. Very few. The pharaoh decided everything, and everything was handed down through tradition. And everything worked out till the Hyksos. So this is, you know, the fact that they were able to, a corrupt priest, which is it always happens to white rabbits, it corruptions through religion, was able to get their foot back in the door and overthrow the place. But the everyone focuses around King Tut because it has been used during my lifetime post World War II. This stuff has been used to drive down multiculturalism, multiracialism, even the Afrocentric version of Egypt, everything else. And King Tut has been a rallying cry for them on a lot of issues. For what reason, no one knows. You know, the only question I have about it is that there's smoke behind these characters. And where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a lot of smoke behind the parties around Tut. You were at a time in Egypt after the Hyksos, when the Hyksos were there, that they were undergoing a racial transformation. The Hyksos brought in black slaves. And that's how the Hyksos were known for, slave trading, apparently. The Egyptians called them the Hiburu. What does it mean in Egyptian? Apparently, in Canaanite, that's what they spoke. The language of Egypt is like Canaanite Phoenician. what Hiburu means is parasite. And so there's a lot of question marks about this, but shortly after that, Egypt was going through racial transformation, much the same as America is now. So if you start DNA testing, 4,000 years from now, if you were to go 4,000 years in the future and randomly test DNA at death in America right now, 2010, who knows what you'd find? You could find a white rabbit, you could find anything. Well, Egypt was going through that too shortly thereafter. There's just a lot of speculation going on regarding Tut, regarding everything around him. He was a sick young king. The only thing he's famous for is they found all his goods. But the circumstances surrounding his life, the characters involved before and after, are such a big deal. There's always two question marks in white rabbit history that we don't know everything about. One, Egypt. Two, Babylon. Sumeria. The Anglo elite descend from Egypt. Egypt, Rome, Greece, then what else? British Isles. The Germans would go, Sumer, India, Germany, that type of thing. Those are the two different world views. And so Anglosphere is always concentrated right down in Egypt. And this has been a big, big deal. This young pharaoh who just happened to be discovered by an Englishman, this amazing tomb and all his treasures. And everything has come out about his life, and there's a lot of scandals involved. There just happens to be Akhenaten. He happens to be involved. It just happens to be the famous Nefertiti. It just happens to be the Hyksos. It just happens to be in a critical time. You see my point. So there's been a great deal of questions. There's also another big contradiction here. Zahi Hawass, who has his famous television show, Chasing Mummies, he's kind of like a loudmouth, egotistical, a little, he's probably what the Hyksos were. Some have speculated he's a Jew, he's Team Pink Rabbit. I don't know what his background is, I don't know his legacy, he may be a Muslim, I don't know, I don't care. I do know he's our enemy. He has always said, when asked whether the Egyptians were black, he came out and said they weren't black. When asked whether they were white, he said they were just Egyptian. They're mixed. And he said he would never release DNA testing. The reason he would never release DNA testing because they were inaccurate. And I'm going to get back to this in a minute. So this is kind of a contradiction, because he has total power over Egyptian antiquities. He can pretty much refuse to release this stuff. And he always has. He was also supposedly involved, and I don't know for sure on this, there was a big flooding of a dam, and they flooded a bunch of blonde mummies, a bunch of really Aryan-looking mummies with long red hair and long blonde hair. There's all kinds of them in Egypt at one time. And he in fact, there was a show on the Science Channel by some white rabbit who was going around the world trying to prove that the Aryan race does not exist. Now, besides pointing out the obvious, that only an Aryan would spend an hour long doing a special trying to prove that the Aryan race didn't exist. And only an Aryan would do something so silly. But anyways, besides a Jew rabbit, there's another group that I guess would spend an hour long special. But they wouldn't have to, because they could hire a crazy Aryan to do that. Because only a white rabbit would sit on Stormfront and spend their whole time debating whether or not white rabbits are a social construct. We're the only ones that do such nonsensical behavior. But it's kind of funny. But anyways, during the special, they had a mummy from Nazi Germany that they got out of Egypt. This was a Christian, a Coptic Christian from Egypt, and it had beautiful blonde hair, this mummy. And it became quite a scandal in the special. It was said, well, you know, how did this get in Egypt? Well, they were all over the place at the time. Yeah, Egypt went through a major transformation. And even as early as the beginning of Christianity, and after that, there were all kinds of Europeans there in that whole area. North Africa, but Zahari Hawass, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and I don't care, has always been a stickler. My alternative research listeners would know that he is a liar. He has lied about a lot of different things, and he's a big cover-up. But now, who actually controls Egypt? Zahari Hawass is like a king over there. But he automatically answers the Team Pink Rabbit. But they've had some problems with this one. So why, after all this, after my whole entire lifetime and your lifetime, I don't care when you were born, really, your whole entire lifetime was spent watching, unless you read March of the Titans by the famous racialist author, you spent your whole entire life seeing the Egyptians as black. In fact, the latest special with Zahari Hawass on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, all show Egyptians as black. They're doing reenactments of black Egyptians. That's all you've ever seen. Why, at the last minute, even after Zahari Hawass said that Obama was a modern King Tut, why? I mean, Obama went to Egypt and they announced he was a modern King Tut. Why, after all this, would they release a genetic test when he said he never would on the infamous young pharaoh, King Tut? Why? And the answer is quite provocative. The answer I got, and I've got an answer, I got a little birdie, a little white birdie that whispered an answer. I got two answers, and the both answers are very perplexing. This is one of the most significant events that has went unnoticed on American TV. Hasn't made American TV. It's made the racial blogs. Yeah, it always makes racial blogs, but most of them have read March of the Titans. They thought he was white all the whole time. I wasn't so sure about that, because the parties that promoted him would never in the history of our race promote our race. They never once promoted anything white. All your life they promoted King Tut. Now it ends up they promoted a white man. When have the Pink Rabbits ever promoted anything white? Name one time. This is the first time. So what the hell is going on with this kid? The alternative news and researchers are already emailing me, what's going on with this? What's going on with the events around him? The answer I got, and it makes sense to me, but I don't fully understand it, is that Zahari Hawass and Team Pink Rabbit knew for a fact, so they thought, that King Tut was mixed. They thought they were going to level it to the ground once and for all, because Zahir Hawass has said that the Egyptians were mixed. You know, they weren't white, they weren't European, that they were mixed. And so they were going to let it come out on King Tut, because they knew for a fact he was non-white or mixed. Well, if they knew for a fact, what happened? That's my question. That doesn't make any sense. I can't believe they would let this slide. Because if they're making a big event that they're going to release King Tut's DNA, or they're going to have an independent researcher, and if you have some researcher do it, they're going to find out about it. It's going to leak if it's anything other than you think. So this has been put underneath the rug, but this is a huge event. Because they've never promoted a white man. Not in my lifetime, not in your lifetime, not post-war. They just haven't. In old Bob's lifetime, he's 70-something, they haven't promoted anything white. They just spent my whole entire lifetime promoting a vision of Egypt as this multicultural, multiracial, you can't even tell what Zahir Hawass is. You don't even know what he is. He's speckly brown. I don't know what he is, part Arab, part this, part that. He could be anything in the Middle East. He could be anything. He could be something from South America, basically. He could be he's almost the new man, you know. You can't even tell what he is. But they spent this whole entire time promoting this illusion of this multiracial paradise that was Egypt. They spent this whole entire time promoting this wondrous young pharaoh. And there's nothing big deal about him other than they're promoting the damn fool. They're promoting this kid. And the parties around them are with such mysticism, Akhenaten, and he was such a revolutionary. He was hated. So what's going on here? Why did they do that? Well, the answer I got from the little white birdie is that they knew for a fact he was not European, that he was mixed. So what the hell happened? You know, what the hell happened? I asked him, I said, how could they know for a fact? And he wouldn't answer me. He said, well, they thought they knew. They thought they had sources there. They thought this was their new world order. They thought this. They thought, there they go thinking again. The red hippopotamus thought he had it nailed. And I said, this doesn't make any sense. You know, I'm going to tell my listeners this, because I tell my listeners all kinds of crazy stuff. What's one more crazy thing to tell them? But how could they know for a fact? And he said, well, according to their records, he was. Well, then what happened? He said, you know, the only answer I got was the same answer that the Dr. Farrell has said, that has come out, that our enemy, the pink rabbits, invested in the wrong physics. Now, what does investing with the wrong physics have to do with Egypt and King Tut? I have no idea. I have no idea, but I'm passing this along. The reason that was released is not because they want it to promote a white man. They never have, especially a young, sickly white man. I mean, the kid was young and sick, and he's no big deal other than his treasure. But the parties around him are a big deal. The events in Egypt post and they're huge. They're huge, 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 huge. But that's the answer I got, and I thought I'd pass that along. They thought he was non-white. They thought he was mixed, so they weren't really worried about it. And then it smacked him in the head. For once in the history of the pink rabbits, they have promoted a white man. Yeah, they didn't promote him on TV. You've never once seen a white King Tut on TV. You've never once seen anyone in his court white. But this kid is Indo-European. He's a white rabbit. And they've spent their whole entire time promoting him. Fascinating stuff. The whole story, I don't know. The only answer I got is that they invested in the wrong physics and are screwed. What this means, I don't know. You know, time-traveling white rabbits went back and pulled a voodoo snafu on them. Oh, well, I don't know. I guess it made a good movie. I don't know what they mean by that answer, but that's the official answer. I'll tell you the official answer. They invested in the wrong physics, and they thought he was speckly brown. They thought they knew for a fact. You would think they'd cover their tracks on that, because they've never once released any DNA regarding Egyptians, especially, you know, there was a period that Egypt went through, like America now, where you could roll the dice and get who knows what you'd come up with in a DNA test. But there was also a time in Egypt, just like a time in America, where you're going to get a white rabbit. You're going to get something Indo-European. This is a fascinating event. Most of the racialists have covered it from a what you see is what you get standpoint. But this is huge. Because the enemy has basically spent my whole entire lifetime promoting someone that turns out to be white. They promoted a white man. Now, if he were mixed, you would have heard it all over the place. Because how many specials have you seen on King Tut? How many museums? Akhenatens, all these different characters involved. We don't know a lot about the Hyksos, but I have my suspicions. This time period was very provocative. But that is the official story on King Tut. He ends up being Indo-European. And the only answer I can give you is that they were baffled. They were as baffled as anyone. They thought they knew for a fact he was mixed. Can I prove that to you? No. You'll just have to take it on faith. The racialist listening would tell the alternative news researchers that they've never once promoted anything white in the history of our race. They just don't do that. It's kind of like me. I don't promote anything pink rabbitish. If it's by accident, it's by accident. So why would they make such a big accident? I mean, they just announced 2 years ago that Obama was a modern-day King Tut. No, he's not. Obama's a mulatto. King Tut's white. You see the problem with this? We're witnessing someone's new world order come apart. The answer I was given after that was that they invested in the wrong physics. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, you're an Egyptian god. Figure it out. So I don't know what's going on with this character, but something big has just happened here. And this is a time on the calendar where we will get big treats, even if we don't know we're getting them. Our green goddess is at work. Yes, the truth ultimately comes out, but this is pretty wild. This is wild stuff. And most don't realize how significant it really is. Not so much that an Egyptian, okay, we did a DNA test on an Egyptian from the 4th dynasty or something, and he turns out to be Indo-European. This is King Tut. This is King Tut. This is the pharaoh that they said Obama was the modern King Tut. This is a nightmare. How this happened? The ideal that Zari Hawass, after all these years, said he refused the DNA test because they're inaccurate, would now DNA test the young pharaoh, which he spent his whole entire life promoting all these different monuments. They're uncovering cities from the Hyksos. They're doing all kinds of stuff. Now, all of a sudden, he allows it to slip out that this is Indo-European. Well, the fact of the matter is, if they're doing the DNA testing, they're not going to control when it comes out. Depending on how they do it, but they did it believing for a fact he was mixed. And I guess that is a rational explanation. But how would they know that? And what exactly happened? What's going on in here? And then, of course, you have the dilemma, the huge, huge ordeal between Hawass and Germany over the bust of Nefertiti. And so this is really confusing. Who I guess is Tut's mother or something. Who knows? Who knows the whole story here? There's a big story here. There's a huge story here. Because in the history of the pink rabbits, they don't promote white rabbits. Someone's just spent my whole entire lifetime building up Discovery Channels and promoting a white rabbit. Nothing big, nothing. There's no big deal about Tut. Of course, now that he's white, I guess maybe we'll make a big deal out of him, but, you know, no one could ever figure out why are they promoting King Tut? Well, it's not so much Tut, it's the people around him. It's the Akhenatons, it's the Hyksos, it's the glamour of all his treasure. It's, think about all the multiracial, multicultural stuff that they've spun off this. This is a big deal. And I'm not sure exactly how crazy this one's, the true story is gonna be, but someone just got pounded. And I mean pounded. Now, that's an embarrassment. One of the reasons, and let me ponder the March of the Titans is, I believe that's what it's called, is a racial publication. And it's not 100% true in my opinion, because we don't know the 100% truth about white history, but it has more truths than your average white history schoolbook right now. So that's what's important. They always say that Egypt was white, and it was built by whites, and that's true, but that's only half true. According to the Egyptians, the guardians of the sky helped them build everything. That's what the Egyptians say. I don't remember being there. Although I was an Egyptian god, I have amnesia about that period, so we're going to have to stay tuned to this. And Hawass has closed the Great Pyramid, too. He closed the Great Pyramid. He said it was too dangerous, so he says. If you watch his show, there's all kinds of dangerous stuff they're crawling through. You're not allowed within a mile of the Great Pyramid. And I've told you before, there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on there. You know, they're all aligned with Orion. And Orion, of course, if you don't know, all the pyramids are aligned with Orion, that whole entire pyramid complex aligned with Orion. There are three pyramids unknown, one that was disassembled by the Romans. Yeah, the Romans disassembled this huge pyramid. It was a son of Khufu's pyramid, disassembled this huge, beautiful pyramid. There are two other beautiful pyramids. Apparently, no one knows where they're at, or they've kept hidden. They haven't found them. They may be in the desert. For all I know, they could be in Europe. Ready for them to dig them up or something. But there's some big events happening in Egypt. Some big stuff going on there. I just don't have the whole story. But in his chasing mummies, he's running around there through all this dangerous stuff, but they've closed the Great Pyramid. They're not allowed within a mile. Something's going on with that. And I've talked about this structure before, the tetrahedron, which is what a pyramid is in another frequency. And I'll come back to this in the next broadcast of Q&A. Yeah, the next broadcast is Q&A, question and answers. And I'm going to talk a little more about this because it's fascinating. Orion is the birthplace. The star Orion is the birthplace, supposedly, of every star in this galaxy, in the galaxy we're in. It's the birthplace. Interesting stuff. But something's up with all this. Something's up with all this. Because of what you see is what you get is simply the obvious. Our enemy does not promote white rabbits. And Hawass, if Hawass was going to promote white rabbits, when asked if the Egyptians were black, he said no. If asked if they were white, well, he said yes, they're Indo-European. There are many mummies that he could have at least been somewhat honest. He said they were all mixed. Well, not this one. Not the one he spent his life promoting. I mean, these guys have promoted Tut nonstop. No one knows why. And then, you know, so for once, the pink rabbits are promoting something white. It's funny stuff. And the only answer I can give you is that they thought he was speckly brown. They thought they knew for certain, apparently, something went wrong. And the explanation I got was that they're screwed. Yeah, they're screwed. They invest in the wrong physics. Now, of course, in a New World Order scenario, what would that mean, that you invest in the wrong physics? That means you're done. Okay, you're not dealing with some advantage like, okay, I got a machine gun, you got a 30-06. Well, if you have a 30-06, you might be able to kill me. No, you invest in the wrong physics, or if someone has a superior physics, you're over with. What this has to do with King Tut, I have no idea. What this has to do with Egypt and pyramids, stay tuned. I don't know. The sky's the limit, though. Provocative stuff right in front of our face every day, and no one's really talking about it. That's my job. Or at least I'll try to make that my job. In the next piece, I am going into a big Q&A. Q&A about all kinds of stuff. Some crazy, some out there, some not so far out there. And we will go back over that. One of the last things I was asked about genetic testing. I've never had a genetic test. I'm not too worried. I'm not too worried about being declared speckly brown and white skin. But one of the reasons I haven't yet is for one simple problem. The problem is that, white rabbits, we know for a fact, were spread out all over the planet. There's no part of the planet they haven't been spread out over. And there are many times where you think a group, like you have a marker for the Cherokee Indians, well, it turns out the Cherokee Indians, you know, you maybe you're a white rabbit, you get a genetic testing, say, oh, you're part Indian. Well, what they weren't being honest about the markers, and they're still not being honest about all the genetic markers. It turns out that the Cherokees or one of these Indians, several of these Indian groups in America, actually have an Indo-European ancestor. So we don't have their marker, they have one of our markers. And that's a problem with a young white that gets a genetic testing and say, oh, you got this marker from North Africa, or that doesn't mean anything to me. Because I don't trust this stuff just yet. I'm sure it'll be very accurate someday, and I'm positive someone knows the whole truth. But I've never really got a genetic testing for that reason. You know, you have all these people in America that had a genetic test, quite a number, and said they were part Indian. Well, it's the other way around. The Indians have an ancient Indo-European maternal ancestor. And that is like that in several different cases around this world that they're not being honest about. At least so I've been led to believe. Furthermore, no one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, you know what? We're going to give you a genetic test, and according to this genetic test, you have an Arab ancestor 50,000 years ago. And because you have an Arab ancestor 50,000 years ago, you're all mixed. So we're going to create a blend of humanity in only Africa. No one's flooding China with non-Chinese saying, you know what, 10,000 years ago, you have a European ancestor. Because you have a European ancestor 10,000 years ago, we're going to create a blend of humanity in only China. Only white rabbits are faced with this. Only white rabbit leaders do this. It's genocide. Yeah, this scam about genetic testing and stuff like that, and that's what it was. It's very dishonest. it's very dishonest when they do it in a college classroom. They pass around swabs and they swab all the white rabbits and they show that, you know, 50,000 years ago you had some. It's a bunch of nonsense because of the markers and how it works. And no one else is doing that around the world. It is genocide. It's just another scheme or scam they have. But pretty fascinating stuff. I don't know what's going on with King Tut. I don't know about this. I don't know about this whole episode of Egypt, but I have a feeling there's smoke there. And where there's smoke, there's lots of fire. Always has been. But that's why I've never had a genetic test. I don't, I'm not really worried about it, but I don't think we have all the markers down. Most of them we do, but there's a few question marks regarding, guess where? North Africa and stuff like that. More people are related to us than we are them. But they get these young white kids these tests, and they're simply perfectly healthy whites, and their whole world falls apart to find out they have some ancestor, several thousand years ago that wouldn't mean anything anyways. It wouldn't mean anything anyways in modern day language. And not only that, you know, they may very well be false. They may very well not be the whole story. Maybe those people in North Africa, whatever strain in North Africa, maybe that person has an actual European ancestor. You see the challenge with it. And that came out with the American Indian tribes in America. And it's fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. So when they get that solved, I think it'll be pretty cool stuff. But until it does, there's another thing too, is that we will eventually go into, I don't know if I've ever talked to you guys before, but since we're on the role of genetics, instead of, we'll call it, leapgenics. You've heard of eugenics? Well, there's going to be a term called leapgenics. It's a patented white rabbit phraseology. And leapgenics is when you'll look on a screen and your little lady rabbit will be pregnant with a little baby rabbit in its early stages. And you'll be able to hit on a screen and choose eye color, choose hair color. Maybe you want a nice peachy white rabbit, or maybe you want a bright white rabbit. Well, you'll be able to choose all that. You're going to design it. And so you'd be able to take out any ancestor you didn't like within a certain range. You may be able to take something out, you know. Maybe you have an actual Indian ancestor 300 years ago. You want to knock that ancestor out. We don't want his genes. Who knows? Clean that rabbit up. Well, that's what's coming. Leapgenics, what I call leapgenics. Many elements of the Christian hierarchy, even in Europe, went nuts over this, over designer babies. Because guess who wants to design babies? All the non-whites in places like India. India's talking about having designer babies, and guess what? They'll have Aryans. Real ones. I'm not talking about brown Aryans. There is white genes in India, and you could coax those out. And that's what's coming. So if you worry about having some ancestor 5 centuries ago or something that was something, what is important, and I'll be quite up front with you, is how your mind works and consciousness. Not necessarily some off-the-cuff ancestor decades, centuries ago or something like that, especially 5,000 years ago. What's important is how you think, but that leapgenics is there. Designer babies are right on us, and it has huge implications for our race, because over the course of one generation, you'll be able to do more eugenics than you could over 1,000. Over 1,000 years. Think about how easy it would be if you just told a white couple, look, before the baby turns, let's say, 3 months old, whatever the deadline is, you can pick a hair color and eye color, and you can make sure it's racially healthy and whatever that means, or genetically healthy, and all that kind of stuff. You know, just boop, 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 on a computer. Designer little white rabbits. And they've already got the technology. They're already, I'm convinced that they got this stuff in the pipeline. And we'll talk about this more, but this is fascinating stuff. But all you guys worried about instituting eugenics, you haven't seen anything until you've seen designer babies and leapgenics. Design your own white rabbits. All you have to do is let them do it. They'll go nuts. They'll go nuts with blonde hair and blue eyes and red hair and whatever else they want to have. But of course, right now it's kind of random. Two white rabbits hook up and it's kind of random. That would make it very non-random. Very interesting stuff, but that's what's coming down the pipeline. Or it's already in the pipeline. It's already here. They're already on the verge of letting you pick eye color and stuff. But We'll continue this conversation on the Q&A as I go into some interesting stuff. Interesting for some at least. And this episode is a transition episode. Horace came back from vacation. In the next episode, I will be going into, it'll be a Q&A, and then the episode after that, and I'm working on them all at the same time, will be White Rabbit Psychology and Ecology. We're going to talk about some interesting stuff, why white rabbits save so much stuff. They're always trying to save other animals and save other rabbits. We're going to talk about, guess what? I'm going to go back into Egyptian history because there's some interesting things there. When they tried to domesticate something in Egyptian history. They tried to domesticate an animal. And it ended up being as dangerous to them as, almost as the black rabbits were to us. You remember when in America in the 20th century we tried to domesticate the indigenous black rabbits of Africa. It's turned out about the same. Same as this critter they tried to domesticate in Egypt. A disaster. But I'll be back with you again on the next Follow the White Rabbit. And the next two will be up shortly thereafter. Shortly after this one. Thanks for listening. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in and to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. Remember, I'll remember your face so pale.